You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The derailment of an oil train in Lac-Mégantic last year resulted in 47 lives lost and millions of liters of crude oil spilled into the town and nearby waterways. Since then, more fuel train derailments have occurred, the most recent being in the Vancouver area on January 11th. To find out what we have learned about the oil-by-rail industry since the accident in Lac-Mégantic, we're joined by Roger Annis, blogger, socialist, and trade union activist. Hello, Roger.
Good morning.
Now, bring us up to date, first of all, on what's happened in Lac-Mégantic since the accident in July.
Well, the people there are very much still in recovery mode from an unbelievable disaster. 47 of their townspeople, friends, family, perishing in the disaster there on July 6th. So I'm sure that, you know, this is something that will never be overcome, but will certainly take months and years emotionally to overcome. The rail line was severed by the explosion, and it has taken some months to reconnect it. It has been reconnected in the very center of the town. So freight traffic is rolling again on the line, but not oil traffic. The owner at the time of the disaster has said it wouldn't resume oil train shipments, and that's, of course, very much welcomed in the town. But there is a new owner now. The rail line that's called the Montreal Main and Atlantic Railway was owned by a short line rail operator in the United States. It's just been sold to an investment group in the United States, so maybe all cards are on the table as far as whether this investment group would want to resume oil train shipments. I think that's highly unlikely. I can't imagine that people along that rail line now, not just in Quebec, but also in the state of Maine, would allow that resumption of traffic to occur on the line. But, you know, these days with oil by train, who knows, you know, the limits of where the owners of the railways and of the oil companies would go. And the last thing very important is that there's two class action lawsuits underway against the consortium of business interests that caused this accident to take place. Irving Oil Refinery in St. John, which contracted to receive the oil shipping companies in North Dakota from where the oil originated, and then the CP Rail, which brought the oil from North Dakota to Montreal.
Now, there have been more oil derailments since then. There was in North Dakota on December 30th and New Brunswick in January 7th. Tell me a little bit more about those.
Sure. And there's actually a few more to throw into the mix as well. In October, there was a derailment and fire and explosion west of Edmonton, Gainford, Alberta. But the most recent one on January 7th is quite telling in relation to Lac-Mégantic. This was in Plaster Rock, New Brunswick, the north of the province of New Brunswick, on the CN main line that connects Montreal to Halifax. And this is where the oil train shipments were switched over to immediately after Lac-Mégantic. Those oil trains kept rolling, but instead of going on the MM&A line on that direct route from Montreal to St. John, they switched over to the CN main line. And so this is where the derailment occurred on January 7th in northern New Brunswick. Four propane cars and five oil cars. I've looked very hard, and I've talked to people in New Brunswick and Quebec to find out what awareness is there of this switchover that took place of the oil trains to the CN main line. Did the people along that line know this was happening? How many trains per day are flowing there? What are the precise dangers and threats to people living on the train line? Seems that this was not really that studied or examined that closely, and I think it's another example of just how out of control this whole oil-by-train business really is.
Now, I want to finish the kind of summary of recent derailments by looking at what happened in Burnaby, much closer to home for us here in the Lower Mainland on January 11th. What happened there?
Well, that was a coal train. This is part of the regular shipments of coal trains. We have two large coal export terminals in Vancouver. The Vancouver region is now the largest exporter of coal in North America, much of it coming from the United States. So this was a coal train on its way to the Neptune Terminal in North Vancouver that derailed, dumped some of the cars, dumped their load into Burnaby Lake, which has some serious environmental consequences. But of particular importance is that the CP rail line, which runs along Burrard Inlet and is further north from the CN line where the derailment happened, is taking oil cars by rail into the refinery in Burnaby, the Chevron refinery, and also to the Kinder Morgan export terminal there. So, boy, that's a real wake-up call for all of us in the Lower Mainland. We do have these oil trains coming into the city or continuing onward south on the Burlington Northern Line to the refineries in northern Washington. Again, an aspect of oil by rails, we don't know exactly the quantity, the frequency, and exactly what these cars are saying. The railways say this is proprietary information. They're not going to let municipalities know about this, except maybe now after the fact, following some modest changes to regulations by the federal government recently.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. I mean, have there been changes? What have those changes been? You said they're modest. What's happened?
Yeah, they've been very modest. The federal government and the railways are under intense pressure to account for what's happening. They've allowed this massive expansion of oil by train movement to take place beginning really in the year 2010. And so we find out that there is no regulatory system in the country whereby provinces and municipalities have some advance notice of what's coming through their communities. And this is what happened in Lac-Mégantic as well. Those people would have seen the oil trains rolling through, but no one would have said, hey, this is what's happening. Here's what the consequences may be. So the recent changes, which have been, you have to really read between the lines in the press to see through the misrepresentation. The changes merely say that the railways will let jurisdictions know after the fact what's gone through their communities, and they will not be communities will not be given advance notice. And an aspect of the Lac-Mégantic disaster, which continues, is that the oil in North Dakota is highly volatile. It's a different kind of oil than other forms of crude oil. The oil companies and the railways knew this in advance. They knew this when they started moving. Well into the process of moving this oil, well before Lac-Mégantic, and they didn't tell anyone in the public about this. So this is, you know, an additional aspect. If the oil going through the given community is coming from North Dakota, from the Bakken field, as it's called, as opposed to, let's say, more traditional crude oil from Alberta or elsewhere, or tar sands bitumen, then this Bakken oil is much more volatile and dangerous. And again, this is something that's just, you know, is not, that information is not provided in advance to municipalities.
So is it possible to move oil safely by rail?
I don't think so. I mean, much of the discussion today, and this has been the most recent round of discussions and industry meetings, is doing something to make the oil cars themselves more protected from crashes, because right now they're highly vulnerable to crashes. So there's talk of, you know, putting protective shields on them, certain types of protections on the valves. They don't break off so easily if a car is derailed. For one, the rail companies are fiercely resisting this because this will cost them billions of dollars to upgrade this fleet. There's about 92,000 oil cars in North America serving specifically oil. So the cost of upgrading these, and even more so of replacing them, is in the billions of dollars. The railways don't want to do that. The federal government is not going to oblige them to do so. So we'll get a patchwork system in its place. I think even with a new generation of more protected, crash-protected oil train cars, no, these things are not, cannot be made completely safe. So on both counts, I think, it's a false. And of course, the very idea of, you know, debating the relative safety of oil by train begs the question, what about the environmental consequences?
Yes, another whole area as to whether that we should be moving that oil at all. But I wanted to go back to Lac-Mégantic for a moment and just ask you what the lawsuits there have revealed about the ownership of the various rail companies.
Yeah, both the newspaper reporting, which has been pretty good from, especially I think the Globe and Mail, the reporters in the Globe and Mail deserve a lot of credit for really going to North Dakota and digging up. It was the Globe that first reported on the known volatility of the oil and how the companies engaged in moving it were just, you know, just saying, well, that's what it is. We'll go ahead. So that has come out. What the lawsuits are tracing is the pattern of responsibility for what took place. Because when you look at the whole process of shipping this oil, you have the firm that buys the oil and wants it delivered, in this case Irving Oil in St. John, New Brunswick. They have the largest refinery in Canada there. Then you have the companies that pull the oil out of the ground. Then you have the companies that have the shipping facilities in North Dakota, which aren't necessarily the same as the companies pulling it out of the ground. And then you have the railways. So all of those are involved in this process. So the lawsuits will attempt to determine exactly who has what degree of responsibility. And interestingly, for example, the Transportation Safety Board raided the offices of Irving Oil in St. John just before Christmas. So they're obviously going after that kind of detailed information of who knew what when and did what about it. I think there will be, you know, important financial settlements. It's inevitable for the victims of the crash. And also the Quebec government has been trying to get all of the parties involved to help pay for the cleanup, and they're all resisting this. They're all saying it's just that little short line, rail line, MM&A that's responsible. The rest of us, we don't have responsibility. So that's a separate legal and other action. But as far as criminal responsibility goes, who brought these trains through these communities with that degree of risk and said and did nothing to protect the communities? I have my doubts that we'll see that kind of criminal responsibility, although definitely in three or four important fields, one can definitely speak of criminal misconduct on the part of the consortium that brought that deadly train through Lac-Mégantic and today is bringing trains through communities like it across the continent.
Now, you said that that oil by rail is going through a significant expansion. What's happening here in BC?
Well, I think the biggest story for us and the biggest concern is the threat, and that's what I call it, the threat of the Alberta and BC governments to bring oil by rail in significant quantities to Vancouver and also to Prince Rupert if we don't accept their tar sands pipelines. It's unbelievable they would make this kind of threat, but that's what they began to voice last October. The same threat was voiced in editorials in the Vancouver Sun and the Calgary Herald, because there's three things that are really driving the oil by train expansion. One is that the price of North American oil is competitive now with world prices, and so it's not cheaper necessarily now to go abroad for the oil. You can get oil from Alberta or from the continental United States that's competitive. But much of the oil, and certainly the oil in Alberta, it's landlocked, and it's also trapped, if you will, by environmental concern over pipelines. And so the third big factor here is that the regulations to move oil by train are significantly more lax than are the regulations governing the construction of pipelines. And as we know well with the Northern Gateway Pipeline, it's not an easy thing to convince the public that an oil or tar sands pipeline is a safe thing. The railways pretty much have carte blanche. They can do what they want.
Well, the railways
can...
are already there.
Yeah, they have
the
infrastructure.
I mean, the rail lines are already there.
Yeah, but also there's no infrastructure, there's no regulation as there is with pipelines saying, oh, what are the environmental consequences here? What happens if we get a train spill? That just kind of doesn't figure in. So, I mean, the railways are almost like a bit of a feudal fiefdom in North America. They can pretty much do what they want. And really the only thing stopping them is public awareness and protest, which is, of course, that's what's building now over the oil by train issue and will make it more difficult to proceed with this. But frankly, I think that the monster's out of the box, and it's going to be very difficult to put it back in. I think we're engaged in a long-term struggle here to protect our waters, our land, our communities from this threat of oil by train.
Now, you were recently in Prince George. Are people there aware of that threat very much?
Very much so. For one, when you're in Prince George, you're just aware of how much that city and that region is the confluence of all of the, what I call the offensive by the fossil fuel industry to expand. So this is, you know, approximately where the Northern Gateway pipeline will run through, the LNG pipelines, plural, that they want to run through to the northern coast of British Columbia. There's already some oil by train movement going through there and lots of coal train movement. But as I talked about earlier, if the BC and Alberta governments and the corporate interests they represent don't get their Northern Gateway pipeline, then they're threatening a place like Prince George with, you know, significant volumes of oil train movement if they can succeed to get an oil export terminal built in Prince Rupert and then begin to feed it using the CN rail line. So, I think certainly from my observations and even just reading the daily newspaper up in Prince George, you get a really deep appreciation of how aware people are of what's going on around them. I talked to several railway employees who are certainly deeply aware of you know, the increasing volume of traffic of fossil fuels, coal in particular, but oil if it comes to that. And yeah, there's an awful lot of concern about that. A lot of people I talk to in Prince George, they just feel like everything's out of control. They don't really have any control over what happens in their communities and what affects them. And so that's, you know, that's their struggle, but it's also our struggle here as well, because we're, you know, we're facing much of the same issues here in Vancouver. So I think we need a much more province-wide awareness of this whole scope of what we're facing and of the climate change consequences for all of this, because we're talking about the burning of fossil fuels that with enormous consequences for the future of humanity on the planet.
Well, it's been really good to talk to you this morning, Roger. Thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, you're welcome. It's good to talk to you and to your listeners.
I've been speaking with Roger Annis. He's a blogger, socialist, and trade union activist, and we've been speaking about the oil by rail industry in North America. You can visit Roger's personal blog at rogerannis.com.